We prayed together and now we're ready to go into our topic. But I've got bad genes. Have you ever felt like somebody says, well, my father was this way, maybe he was a drunkard, and my grandmother, she had diabetes, and so the cards are stacked. I've got bad genes, and like that says it all. So let's look at this. We're going to start with a video, and we'll cut it at a certain point. And we have this also in a way that you can present this topic.
And
it's
this
one of the more scientific topics of our Homes of Hope and Health series. But don't be afraid of that. It's all here in black and white and good pictures. And the presenter today is our son, Dr. Wes Youngberg, a doctor of public health. He is on the faculty of medicine, and he's on the faculty of public health at Loma Linda University. Has his own private practice in Temecula, California. And Millie and I are not scientists. We are not physicians. We happen to be doctors of education. The content of Win Wellness, we have leaned heavily on our son, who knows the science that's involved. We've had many readers, physicians, scientists. We had parts of our series was read by five different people in the chemistry department, in the biology department at Andrews University. We've had geneticists read our information, and we think it's pretty good science. And it's brand new. Some of it has references as long ago as 2 or 3 months ago. And so let's listen to...
Thinking about this lately, so much hopelessness in our world today. Where can we start giving those individuals hope? Especially as it has to do with health. There's been so many crises lately with regards to health. Can we possibly help individuals? Can we possibly begin to regain our health? Who needs hope? I think the answer is clear, that we all need hope. What about heart disease? What about hypertension, diabetes, depression, chronic fatigue, and pain? Is there hope for people who are struggling through these chronic degenerative illnesses? Or is it just part of the natural aging process? Is it something that is just going to happen anyways? Is it part of our fate? I have patients that I see from time to time in their late 20s, early 30s. They're just starting to have families. Little kids find out that they have liver failure, find out they're having kidney failure from diseases that were totally preventable. From diseases that, if actually diagnosed properly, or once diagnosed, treated properly, using natural approaches, using lifestyle medicine approaches, could have entirely prevented that complication from setting in. We have millions of individuals who are suffering, who are dying prematurely, because they do not understand the principles that are available to us. So today we're going to be looking at some factors that can start giving us answers to this. But individuals say, "But I've got bad genes." Have you ever heard that? Oh yes, doctor. My father had this problem. My uncle Joe had this problem. My grandmother suffered from this problem. It's chemical, it's biochemical, it's ingrained in me. I was born with this. It's only a matter of time. Well, many people just have this mentality. Que sera, sera. Whatever will be, will be. It's a romantic notion that sets the stage for fatalistic thinking, for an unwillingness and even a lack of desire to seek where help can be derived. So do you believe this? No, we cannot. Are we really predetermined in our health? Is it just a matter of, again, time before we suffer the illnesses that we have inherited? So what are the true determinants of health? Is it fate? Is it nature or nurture? Is it genes or an environment? Well, today I want to describe for you and present to you what I think is a very fascinating introduction to research that is just coming to the forefront. Re-engineering genetic risk. Do you know that we can do that? Do you know that we can transform sickness into health? And literally learning how to turn bad genes off and turn good genes on. Genes are real. I believe that every illness has a very powerful genetic component to it. But that doesn't mean that we're going to have to suffer from that eventually. It just means that the gene is there and we have choices on whether we're going to follow strategies that are going to turn on that gene or turn it off. So we all, everybody sitting in this audience, everybody watching this on TV, has many bad genes. We all do. I do. What are we going to do about that? We're going to start learning that the genes are like dim switches. You can begin to turn them down, or you can begin to turn them up. So let's begin discussing how to go about that. And the first way to begin to appreciate the power that we have in transforming genetic potential is the story of the fat yellow mouse. Researchers across the world use mice for research that are called the agouti mouse. These are mice that are genetically bred to have a yellow coat. You know, mice are supposed to have a nice brown coat. They're supposed to be light and lean and mean and fast and healthy and rugged. Well, this mouse has a yellow coat. It quickly becomes obese, develops diabetes, and dies of cancer. Well, meet its identical twin. Can you believe that these mice are identical genetically in every way? Does this begin to guide your thought processes in recognizing that the gene itself does not predetermine us to the disease process? Another side view of these mice. So they're genetically identical, but health-wise, they are very different. So researchers at Dr. Jurdle's lab at Duke University, in the genomic laboratory, they wanted to ask the question, was it possible for us to take these mice that are genetically identical, and they even look identical at the beginning, and feed them a different diet? Actually provide a randomized sample of these mice with superfoods. Is it possible that we can somehow change the genes so that when these mice are now born to mothers that have been given superfoods, that they are now born with different genes? You know what they found? They found that within one generation, these fat yellow mama mice were giving birth to brown-coated, lean mice that did not go on to develop obesity, diabetes, or die of cancer. And so the researcher initially thought, wow, we have found the fountain of youth. We have discovered how to actually completely get rid of that gene. But when they actually looked at the genes, they discovered that they hadn't changed the genes at all. The genes were exactly the same. And so they had to step back and think outside of the box. And one of the younger researchers, as he was looking at this, says, well, let's start looking other places around the gene. And they came up with this whole new science of epigenetics. It's things that are above and beyond the gene itself that influence how the gene works. And in fact, they discovered that there was a triggering mechanism outside of the gene that when switched, when activated, turned off the gene that caused the yellow coat, the rapid onset of obesity, the diabetes, and the cancer. Do you want to know how to turn off that gene? Well, here is a picture of these mice that have been exposed to different levels of these supernutrients. You see that? You see how this mouse here was given very little of the supernutrient, and as they gave more of these nutrients to the mice, they became transformed. The gene was still the same, but the expression of the gene, the way the gene acted in the body, the only thing that really matters, changed. So we can say accurately that we've all been born with serious genetic defects as a result of thousands of years of sin, as a result of thousands of years of degeneration of the race. We have been born with multiple genes that can destroy us, that can cause misery, premature death. But it doesn't have to be expressed. That's the good news. That's what gives us hope. See, the gene, as we look at a graphic of the DNA helix, you see where it's lit up brightly? That means it's active. But there's areas of the gene which are difficult to see that actually are turned off. They're darkened. And so all those genes are not expressed. And you see these little red balls here that represent chemicals that come from foods. These nutrients that are available to each of us abundantly, if we were to choose to consume them, they provide these special nutrients that go to the gene and switch the way the gene works. Begins to dim that gene that is likely to cause a problem unless it is turned off. Well, for example, what is it that turns the diabetic gene on? You know that over 70% of the entire world's population has at least one of the major genes that we used to say caused diabetes. It doesn't cause diabetes. It's just, it will allow diabetes to occur if that gene has been activated. And so a researcher at the Joslin Diabetes Center in Boston, one of the ivory towers of diabetes medicine, they understood that the gene had to be turned on for diabetes to occur. So they asked the question, well, if we could somehow manipulate that gene and find a drug that turned it off, we'd be famous. You know, we'd get the Nobel Prize for medicine, right? Well, they discovered it. And it's something that many of us, most of us, have been exposed to in our lifetime. They discovered that when they introduced inflammation at a high level in these animals, that they would become diabetic. And when they introduced the most commonly available anti-inflammatory, which was aspirin, and they gave enough of this aspirin, they were actually able to reverse the diabetes. So you're all wondering, okay, well, I already take an aspirin a day or maybe one or two a week, so would that actually reverse diabetes or prevent it from occurring? As the researchers extrapolated to how much aspirin they would have to give humans that would be comparable to what they were given to the mice, they discovered something that really upset them. it would take 19 to 20 full dose aspirins a day. Now, let me ask you a question. What would be the potential problem with anybody taking anywhere near that much aspirin a day? I'm sure many of us are aware of people that had to be rushed to the emergency room because of bleeding ulcers, crashing their car on the highway because they're fainting from a bleed out. And that's with just taking one or two a day. So they realized that that was not the answer. But let's now that we understand that inflammation is recognized in the medical literature as the main trigger that activates the gene associated with diabetes, what then can we find from the literature, from science, that tells us that causes inflammation in our body? So Harvard University, 50 years ago, or 1950 rather, a group of the Harvard professors got together and says, I don't know if we need a department of nutrition anymore. We've already discovered all the vitamins. We know everything there is to know about nutrition. So they actually contemplated shutting down the nutrition department at Harvard. Fortunately, cooler heads prevailed, and now Harvard University has one of the most powerful research studies on nutrition. They're publishing thousands of studies every day on the work that they've been doing. In their health professional follow-up study that has over 50,000 male health professionals and many more women health professionals, they looked at their data all the way back to 1986. And they asked the question. See, they had blood samples all the way back to 1986. They could measure this newly found blood test called cardiac CRP that evaluates inflammation systemically in your body right now. And they tracked that according to a very carefully evaluated nutritional profile. And they discovered what the four most inflammatory foods were in the diet, because they could track it with the blood samples every 2 years for many decades. Now, do you want to know what the most inflammatory foods are? Okay, if you knew what they were and you understood that those foods have the potential to chemically surround the gene and activate that triggering mechanism and therefore turn on the genes that cause diseases like diabetes, like certain cancers, and so forth. Would you want to know about that, and would you want to do something about that? Absolutely. Let me go through them real quickly. Number one, the most inflammatory food group that they could find was processed meats. Now, the Harvard study had already established that men and women, these are, again, health professionals, who have a very high socioeconomic standard, they're getting all the medical evaluations, they're getting good health care, they have good health habits in general compared to the average population. But they found that those who are eating red meat on a daily basis over the next 8 years had a 30% increased risk for developing diabetes. And we all know that red meat is kind of the standard whipping boy of the public health community because it's highly saturated fat, it promotes all kinds of health problems, and just about everybody knows that they need to cut back at minimum in red meat, and better yet, just stay away from it. And so we know that there's a 30% increase for those who eat red meats on a regular basis in developing diabetes in just an 8-year period. Did you know if they looked at the same group and looked at those who ate processed meats on a regular basis, the rate of diabetes went up 300%. Okay? So if we're looking for things that we can immediately address right now, and you have had this notion that processed meats, for some reason, because they're convenient, you can just slap them on a sandwich, etc., that they're somehow okay, We need to understand what the medical research actually says. There's a lot of reasons for that that we don't have time to address tonight. But the second inflammatory food group is something that we really need to think through, because most of us don't appreciate how inflammatory this really is, and that is refined grains. There's so many people who actually consider themselves extremely healthy. There are even vegetarians, but they don't think anything about eating lots of refined grains. White rice, white flour, white bread, all the grains that are refined are extremely inflammatory, partly because they don't have the nutrients in them that help neutralize that problem. And so we need to be considering consuming foods that are actually healthy for us, not just foods that are avoiding things we think are unhealthy for us. So health isn't necessarily avoiding things that we know are unhealthy, but making sure that the food has enough nutritive potential so that it can help neutralize the problems that we're already genetically susceptible to. Make sure that all the choices that we're making are actually supporting health. So avoiding refined grains is extremely important. The third group is pretty intuitive. Candies, sodas, pastries, cakes, etc. We all know intuitively that those aren't good for us. We know that we have to limit those. We know that we need to be careful because they can quickly cause weight to go up. We know that they rapidly increase blood sugar. They're extremely inflammatory. Remember, anything that is inflammatory is going to drive sugar up because it activates the diabetic gene. Then the fourth group is very unintuitive. In fact, it's not even a food at all. It is diet sodas. So many people, as they're trying to follow a healthier program, so many diabetics, so many people who are trying to lose weight are saying, well, I need to stay away from sugar. Rightly so. I need to stay away from too many calories, so I'm going to use a diet food. I'm going to use an artificial sweetener, an artificial fat, and pretty soon there's going to be artificial protein too. Okay, and somehow that's going to make me healthier, and it's absolutely false. It actually creates more disease than drinking the regular soda, than eating the regular calories. Every study that has been properly developed shows that individuals who drink diet sodas are much more likely to gain weight, even compared to those who drink the same amount of regular sodas. It also is extremely inflammatory, which explains why it causes so many untold problems. So those are four strategies that are available to us right now that came from Harvard University based on a huge study that we can take advantage of to immediately transform sickness into health. It reminds me of a passage in Isaiah. And from the Message, why do you spend money on junk food, your hard-earned cash on cotton candy? Listen to me. Listen well. Eat only the best. Fill yourself with only the finest. We need to follow that philosophy. And if we do, we're going to enjoy good physical health, good emotional health, and great spiritual health in bringing it all together. So, have you ever heard this? No, you can't reverse this disease, you can only manage it. Right? Or how about, you're going to be on this medicine for the rest of your life. Now, there is some truth to both of those statements. The truth part comes from the fact that most people actually fall into that category. Not because it has to happen that way, it's just that's what happens. But when we tell somebody that's the way it's going to be, a lot of people start believing it. And as soon as you start believing that you can't change, are you going to try to change? Okay? You can't do anything about it, are you going to keep trying? Well, that's why we're making this presentation, so that it gives all of us hope and keeps us focused on doing the things that actually work. There was a study just a few years ago published in the Journal of the American Medical Association. At a time when, if health professionals began to discuss the potential of reversing diabetes, they would immediately be shot down, saying, that's not scientific, that's not evidence-based, you can't be saying that, you're giving false hopes to people. But in fact, it was just a few days after I got shot down at a medical conference after a presentation that this study came out. And let's take a look at what the study showed. They showed that diabetes, this is individuals who received gastric bypass surgery, thousands upon thousands of them that were evaluated for over a year's time, who had diabetes at the onset of the surgery. What's it say here? That diabetes was completely resolved in how many? 5%? 2%? Oh, 77%. That means there was more than three out of four individuals who had full-blown diabetes at the beginning, before the surgery, by 1 year later had no diabetes. It went on to show that two-thirds of people with high blood pressure completely cured, no more medicine. Okay, 70% of those with high cholesterol resolved, even sleep apnea was gone in over 80%. Now don't misunderstand me. I'm not suggesting here that we should all take advantage of gastric banding so that we can get healthier. What I love about this study is that this essentially, once and for all, established in the medical literature that what? There was hope. That these conditions, which are largely considered to be irreversible, are most definitely reversible. We just need to focus on the strategies at work, and we also need to focus on the best strategies, the strategies that actually impact our health best short and long run. Well, let's talk about the potential to transform even after cancer has taken hold. A wonderful study done by Dr. Dean Ornish and published just in 2008 in the proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences. They looked at individuals who had been diagnosed with early prostate cancer, and they gave them the option to go on with standard of care, surgery, etc., or to go through the lifestyle intervention trial. The very same approach that Dr. Ornish over a decade ago showed actually can reverse heart disease. Back then, he was laughed at because many doctors and many researchers, everybody knows you can't reverse heart disease. Why? Because they hadn't taken the time to establish a program that would be sufficiently capable of reversing it. Of course, you can't reverse a health problem unless you actually, what? Address the cause of the problem. And so Dr. Ornish looked at what the multiple causes are based on the evidence-based literature, established a protocol, and showed, indeed, you can reverse heart disease if you follow the plan that has been shown to work. He applied the very same protocol to prostate cancer patients. And the question is, can I, if I've been diagnosed with cancer already, can I modify my genes? Can I change the way they're expressed? So what he did, he followed a protocol that involved a plant-based diet. Now, what's a plant-based diet? This is a diet that provides all the nutrients, or I should say, most of the nutrients that God originally envisioned that we should have available to activate the genes. We were created with a purpose. We were created with a design that if we were willing to follow the design of the Creator, we would get this synergy so that the body would have optimal health and optimal regeneration potential. And so that's what a plant-based diet is. It's not a philosophy. It's not a fad. It's just following the owner's manual of what works. And secondly, moderate exercise. Just getting out there on a daily basis, putting down that clicker, stepping out the door. That's the hardest part about exercise, right? It's just getting out there and doing it. And then following stress management techniques. Okay? being involved in a process that involves weekly support, taking the time to go to your church, meet in your community, have people over to your home to support you emotionally and relationally. Take the time to rebuild and reconnect relationships that have been broken. Okay? Listen to your heart. Listen to what we are being encouraged to do to improve our health overall. Well, what did they find from this study? They found that after taking biopsies of the prostate and looking at what genes were turned on and what genes were turned off, they found that 48 disease-preventing genes were now turned on. And they initially had been turned off, now they're turned on. Okay, 453 genes which promoted disease, they had been turned on, now are turned off. Wow. Okay, do we want to take advantage of this information? Okay, doesn't it give you a sense of hope that, wow, if I just pay attention to the tipping point, what is it going to take for me to activate that gene that helps fight cancer? Okay, the tumor suppressor gene. What does it take to make sure that that gene stays healthy so it doesn't get mutated because of other unhealthy activities going on, some of which we know and some of which we're not even aware of? Okay? It takes a plan. It takes a little bit of study in evaluating what does the literature tell us about this. So essentially, we had 501 genes that changed in just 3 months. With carefully done biopsies of the prostate tissue before and after, following the plan for 3 months. Call it 3 months to wellness. Isn't that amazing? Okay? It doesn't take 10 years. Okay? It just takes a few months' time and your body gets the message. You want to be well. You want to activate the healing process. Well, there was a researcher, a physician, many years ago, who coined these words, "Let foods be your medicine, and medicine be your foods." That was Hippocrates. But even before his time, there was a statement made, and God said, "See, I have given you every herb that yields seed, every tree whose fruit yields seed, to you it shall be food." That was the inception, the creation of mankind. We were given the very best foods available to us. Okay? And the smartest men throughout history have echoed this genesis of what it takes. What is one of the most important strategies to activate the day-to-day healing potential within our body? So there is actually a biology of hope, not just for mice, but also for men. This research applies to every living organism, and we can take advantage of this. I wish I had time to tell you the story of Norman Cousins and how in his books, The Anatomy of an Illness and The Biology of Hope, he's shown how by bringing all these concepts together in synergy, you can accomplish amazing things. You can accomplish transformation. I think of the words of Paul when he says, "Don't conform. Don't conform any longer to the ways of this world. That'll just get you average health. That'll get you, you know, it's average in westernized world. For adults 40 and over, it's average to either be diabetic or pre-diabetic. About 70% of the adult population at that age, 40 and over, has either diabetes or pre-diabetes. That's average. Do you want to be average? Absolutely not. Okay? I want to be healthy. I'm sure you want to have optimal health, and that requires paying attention to a plan that has a chance of working. It was Seneca at the time of Christ, the Roman orator, who said, "It is part of the cure to wish to be cured." Do you wish it? You know, some people don't. Some people like to be sick. Some people like the fact that everybody takes care of them. There's an emotional benefit. But if they could start understanding that they could potentially transform their health, they would start putting away that form of mental illness that prevents them from seeking help and seeking the right cures. So we can choose a new direction. In fact, everything depends on the right action of the will. Through the right exercise of the will, what? An entire change may be made in the life. So we have choices. We have choices available to us. Healthy choices or not so healthy choices. Sometimes we make decisions based on what we're willing to do. But we don't realize that unless we follow a plan sufficient enough, we're not going to get that tipping point. We're not going to get the healing. Because if I wanted to get out that door tonight, I have to walk the whole way. I can't just walk 5 steps and come back, and then 5 steps and come back and wonder why I never get to the door. You have to do something sufficient to accomplish the task. So many people fail in health, in regeneration, in healing, because they just don't take the entire walk. I want to emphasize that while nutrition is extremely powerful, and exercise is extremely powerful, and stress management strategies are extremely powerful, nothing comes as close to the power of love in activating the transforming power that can happen at the genetic level. I believe that with all my heart. So love is really the key to wellness. And this reminds me of one of my favorite passages in Corinthians. It says, "And now abide faith, hope, and love." C.S. Lewis defined faith this way. He says, "Faith is the art of holding on to things we once knew to be true in spite of changing moods and changing circumstances." Isn't that powerful? Holding on to what you know. There's a lot of us out there that we know some truth. We know that it's true, but we avoid it. We run away from it. We try to escape it. We try to stay away from it. But we know it's true. So I encourage us tonight to have faith, to return to what we know intuitively to be true, by understanding the latest scientific studies that support what we already knew anyways. And now act on it. And then we have hope. Hope. Understanding the biology of hope. Understanding what happens when we actually seek and act on that hope. And then, love. Paul says it's these three, but the greatest of these is love. Let me suggest by looking at a couple studies here tonight that, let's see if I can get the advance on the slide, the clicker's not working, there we go. Researchers at the University of North Carolina many years ago did a very interesting study. They did a personality inventory, and all the medical students and all the lawyers going through their training at the University of Carolina. And what they found was is that the half of the doctors who tested most hostile, they tended to be offended easier, they tend to get upset a little bit easier, and so these are questions that you fill out. You're not really thinking about the answers other than what you naturally feel while you're experiencing those situations. And at the end of the test, they evaluated how aggressive they tended to be in their answers, how naturally angry they would become in different situations, but also how cynical they were. The attitude of hostility. And they discovered that those who just had higher scores in that hostility inventory were, look at this, they were 5 times more likely to develop heart disease by age 50. 5 times. You know, in medicine, when we see a 30% increased risk in something, it's all over the news. They shut down medications or shut down certain treatments because there's even a 10% difference. And here we're looking at a 500% change. How you think, What you focus on in your mind has a far greater impact on your health than what you're eating. Now let me say though, that what you're eating can actually dramatically change how you think. Okay, so don't say, okay, good, I'm just going to think real positive and I'm going to eat whatever I want. Okay? Because if you eat whatever you want and you're like most people, you tend to be driven by thirst. Have you heard that commercial? Follow your thirst. Very, very bad idea. You know, if everybody followed their thirst, all kinds of bad things would be happening. Don't follow your thirst. Follow your plan. An objective plan that's based on careful study and evaluation. Careful prayer. What is the right thing to do according to guidance from the appropriate sources. And so, but not just, they were, these...
It's painful to cut my son off. But we have other things to present. This business of genes. You have, I have 25,000 different genes. What was it they said that if your genome were written, it would take what was it? 20 books the size of the Manhattan telephone directory to contain your genome. And it would take 9 years to read it, reading night and day without stopping. We've got a lot of genes. Did you know that 288 of those genes are driven by rest and sleep? So if you're not sleepy tonight, be careful. There's 228 that are registering that, and you'll pay the price. And 2,000 genes are driven by vitamin D level in the blood. Now, vitamin D really isn't a vitamin, but we call it vitamin D. Okay. 2,000 genes driven by the sunshine vitamin. These things are terribly, terribly important. And so somebody said, well, maybe the secret to immortality is someday when we eat of that tree of life, it's going to turn on that immortality gene and we'll live forever. But meanwhile, while we're on this earth, if we obey a good lifestyle, we can turn a lot of genes on that haven't been turned on, and we can turn a lot of genes off that really haven't been doing us that much good. We have all of this, but Millie, you've gone on to something else. Okay. I would like to show them the Wynne Wallace model.
Okay.
If we can go back to that. So the difference of the Wynne Wallace model to some health models, I think it's about slide number 18. 18 or 19.
Okay.
The health, according to the Ministry of Healing, page 227, talks about 8 natural remedies. Some people start and they close their health message with 8 natural remedies. That's it. But the book Ministry of Healing also has 7 chapters on the family. Shall we forget those 7 chapters? The family must have something to do with health, or Ellen White wouldn't have included those 7 chapters. Okay, that's the one, Millie. So my last 2 minutes with you. Here we have the 8 natural remedies. They're in yellow on this diagram. 7 of the 8. But notice Ellen White has 7 chapters. We love music, don't we? Ellen White has 7 chapters on the family, and we include that in the relationships part of this whole sphere. And they're here in blue. And then there is the center part, the greatest healing factor in the universe, as Wes brought out, is love. And as all of these blend together in synergy, Leviticus says, five of you shall chase 1,000, and 100 of you shall put 10,000 to flight. Now that is not mathematical, that is geometrical. Again, in Deuteronomy it says, one of you shall chase 1,000, and two of you will put 10,000 to flight. You would say, well, no, wait a minute. If one chases 1,000, then two ought to chase 2,000, right? No. When these things begin to work together in synergy, something happens. A dynamic happens. The whole is greater than the sum of its parts. And so we include exercise, nutrition, sunlight. We include also showing appreciation, taking time for the family. We include love, using our frontal lobe to make correct decisions. We blend all that together, trust in God. And something begins to happen. Actually, we have integrated, balanced living. We have genetic miracles begin to take place, turning off the bad and turning on the good. Now, my wife always has the last word. And she... No, I say, I have the last word. The last word is, yes, dear. So I promise I'd give her 15 minutes at the end.
Okay.
We can talk more about the Wind Wellness model next time.
Our plan in this these presentations has been that part of the time will be on the content of our materials in the digipacks or in the PowerPoint presentations, which can be used with the DVD player or with the projector and the computer.
And chapter 12 here is I've got bad genes. Everything that Dr. West, pretty well everything that he said is here. And of course we have the PowerPoint slides. We don't have time to review them, but they are there at your disposition for you.
Part of our time we'd like to always spend on leadership training. And I feel that we must spend a few moments with you on how to do this type of ministry and motivate you to do this ministry and to make you have a passion to do this ministry. And I pray that God will impress you of the importance of doing some kind of medical and family evangelism. And I'm praying that God will give some people such great passion that you will want to be a mover and a shaker in helping your church members to start having small group ministry or either do evangelistic meetings or either to have seminars or to do something to reach out to not only our members, they need it too, but also the non-members, our friends, our co-workers, our relatives, our children, our whoever comes into our path. We need to have some kind of a ministry for those who are not of our faith. And that's what Wind Wellness is all about. And at first we push basically the PowerPoint presentations. But we realize that there are many people who are not on
electronic.
They're not electronical. They are not on electronics. And therefore, we decided to come up with our books, which have the materials, and anyone can use them. Even if you have one book, you can use the materials. And again, we say we encourage... If it's solo learning, you share with someone else. If it's husband and wife learning, you share with somebody else. And if it's family learning, you share with someone else. And then there's small group. And we encourage your churches to get started. We're talking about Charleston, right? And we want this to go to Charleston area. We want it to go to your area. And yesterday we talked about how to get it started just by yourself in your own home. And even if it's not a regular church program, that you get it started in your own home. And I'm making you a a handout, which I hope to give you tomorrow, which will give you the steps of how to do to start your small group ministry. But to motivate you a little bit more before you decide what you would like to do in your life, I'm going to tell you about Clare, Michigan, where they have small group ministry. And Ellen White, again, I'm just going to read another quote, "The presentation of Christ in the family by the fireside and in small gatherings in private houses is often more successful in winning souls to Jesus than sermons delivered to the moving throng or even halls or churches." You know, and I've seen it. And I just want to tell you about Clare, Michigan, right as of January. In January, my friends Pam and Marcia decided they were going to do this type of ministry. And it was in January. It was in January, and the temperature was 10 degrees below zero. And they decided, this is the day we're going to go out. Pam was still having chemo, and the other one had fibromyalgia and was having problems. But they decided this was the day that they were going to go. They decided on one location away from their church where they wanted to start one small group. And so they decided, they found the person who said, "I will open my home to have a small group, but I don't know who to invite." They said, "Leave it to us." And they started going home to home. And then they talked to the church members, who lives close to this home. And those members decided they would go to that home. And then they began their first small group. And I just want to tell you, the day that they went out, there are all sorts of miracles. And I won't tell you all of them because, anyway, they decided on this particular day that they would go to knock on the doors. And when they did, the first door, the man opened the door and he looked at them and he slammed the door. And that didn't make them feel too good, did it? Okay, so he went to the next home and they rang the doorbell, and when they went to the next door, they thought, "Oh Lord, please help us," you know. And they walked bravely up to the door and they rang the doorbell, and a lady comes out with a bowl of soup in her hands. And she looks at them and says, "Who are you and what do you want?" Well, that didn't sound too good either. And finally, she kind of gulped and was taken back. She looked at her notes and she says, "Oh, we've come to," she saw the word prayer. She says, "We've come to pray for you." And the lady, her whole countenance changed. She opened the door gently and said, "Come in." And as a result, they discovered that this lady's husband had been put in prison because of driving drunk. He was an alcoholic, and now the whole family was in trauma. And so love is an important part of small groups. And so lovingly they went in, and they talked to the lady, and they had a nice conversation, and then they prayed for her. And there was a fellowship that, a bonding that almost took place immediately, and as a result, the next Sabbath, guess what? That lady was in church. And the next Wednesday, that lady was in a small group. And if I won't tell all the in-betweens, but that lady did go down in the waters of baptism as a result of it. And there are so many miracles. Sabbath, I'm going to tell you more, but just I got to tell you this one. Oh, dear, I better not.
Yeah, you better.
Oh, but I have such a short time. Okay.
We started 10 minutes late. 10 minutes late. We'll run 5 minutes over.
Okay, Scott, is that okay? Anyway, they on that day when they were going home from there, going house to house, all of a sudden, Pam was driving and they were going home, and all of a sudden, Pam says, "This car isn't going the way I wanted to go." And she then finally says, "I think we're going to the laundromat." And so they went to the laundromat. And Pam went into the laundromat, and Marcia stayed in the car to pray. And when Pam went in, there's one person in the laundromat. And that person was that person was had been praying that somebody would come and take her home because she had no place, no one to take her home. They chit-chatted, and anyway, as a result of the chit-chat, Pam took her to her home, but also to all the little stops. Loving acts. Loving acts are the key to evangelism, key to small group ministry, key to meeting each other's needs. It's important, just like Wes said. It has such a healing. It's so healing. But anyway, the next Sabbath, that woman was in church, and the next Wednesday, she was in a small group. Well, I am torn here, but here are Pam and Marcia. She has a wig on because she lost all of her hair. They did start small groups with 8 to 12 people, 1 hour long, presentations about 30 minutes, and small group discussions. And here, what part of their program was to, after they have small groups, they bring in all the small groups together for an event of some kind. This was the Labor Day event. And here, some of the people who were there they had this event. Later on, they had a marriage commitment event where we were also present. More picnic pictures. I just have to tell you about Philip. Philip was one of the people who had was kicked out of his home. The parents said, "They don't want you. Get out of here. Go." And so he had no place to go. Philip ended up finding one little brochure. He calls, hopes that these people would help him to find a place to live in. And that he said, he read Homes of Hope and Health. And so he hoped that somebody would let him stay, had a place for him, that the Homes of Hope people would do that. But that wasn't what they were about. But the next day, he called again. He says, "May I go to a Home of Hope?" He not only went to one Home of Hope that week, he went to three Homes of Hope because he had at least a place to go each evening. But besides that, the Adventists did find a place for him to live in. Again, love is the key to bringing people to Jesus and to guiding them along the way. And as a result, he went to, I don't know how many of these Homes of Hope. He asked for Bible studies. He had Bible studies, and he also was baptized. Here is a part of a marriage commitment seminar, which was another event that took place. And this also brought the church members close together. The non-members and the church members came together for a marriage evening, a fun marriage couple fun evening. No negatives, everything positive, everything positive. It was a beautiful evening, starting around 5 o'clock, sharing with each other, husbands and wives, having a sharing time. A banquet followed, and these young ladies, part of the church has 100 church members about, and even the teenagers were involved in the Homes of Hope ministry. They were waiters, waitresses at the event, and anyway, here they are, husbands are sharing, a husband is sharing a rose to the wife, and a beautifully decorated place in a very simple little church. And here, the husband is giving a flower to the wife. The third event that took place was an evangelistic meeting. And at the evangelistic meeting, Jay Gallimore, too, on here on the screen, on your
president
right,
of the Michigan
right,
Conference.
He was baptizing one of these people. And this lady had been on oxygen. She didn't have it right now. The stories that these people tell are absolutely amazing. How God has changed their lives, taken loneliness away from them, have given them a desire to minister to others. And it seems like God doesn't use educated people. He doesn't use the people with all the degrees and all of the wealth and all of that.
He's not limited to them.
But he uses simple people. And tomorrow, I think I will be able to show you some of a DVD which shows you some of these people who have come to a small group ministry, and their lives have been totally changed, and they have accepted Jesus Christ. They have heard the crisis talk on the bad crises, all the bad things that are happening in people's lives. And they have heard these, and they've heard the story of, like, the family in Michigan. There was a non-Adventist family in Michigan. They had a 17-year-old son. He was in an accident, a solo accident, no one else involved. The son was killed, and the parents were distraught, and they kept saying, "Where is our son? Where is our son?" And the mother was almost out of her mind, wanting to know where her son was. And everybody said, "Oh, he's in hell, you know, burning. Or he's in heaven looking down you. Or he isn't." And all sorts of things were told. And somebody said to them, "Why don't you see what the Bible says?" And they started studying the Bible. And when they started reading the Bible, they discovered that what? The dead know not anything. And so we list some of the texts that this couple found, and they found relief, and they didn't stop there. They kept on studying the Bible, and as a result, today they're Seventh-day Adventists, and they are hay farmers. And they have made much money. God has performed many, many miracles in their lives. And so, anyway, we feel that this ministry can help people to have a new changed life, not only health life, but a new spiritual life. And that's what we long for. We want people in the kingdom of God, don't you? Don't you want to be a part of helping someone?
And Millie, they now have over 10 organized small groups.
Yes.
In the Clare, Michigan church. They're meeting almost every night of the week out here, out there. Practically 100% of the church is involved in the small group Homes of Hope and Health ministry. And 9 have been baptized, another on profession of faith. 3 other families who had left the message and weren't attending, they've come back.
Yeah, and there are more stories. There are just so many stories of what is happening there. And right now, in Michigan camp meeting, they are having a leadership training like here. And as a result of this type of ministry, the church has been totally changed. Revival has taken place. Do you want a revival in your church? Yes. We need a revival in our church, don't we? We certainly do. And if we can just do something simple like invite, even if you had 4 people come to your home, even 2. Not like Abraham, I keep going down. But even a few, and you if you just have some who will come every evening, once a week, and for an hour, and their lives have changed.
There's material is ready.
Yeah, the material's ready.
The PowerPoints are ready if you choose that means.
And we do have it in Spanish and in English and, again, Chinese and other languages. But if you go to ABC and get your DigiPack, which looks like this. But it doesn't have all of the 3 DVDs in it. You will get the one that is in at ABC, and we have a few more. We're making revisions and putting more PowerPoints, improving them, and you will get a brand new set as soon as the PowerPoints are finished. And so if you do, make sure that you leave an address where we can send a brand new set of materials to you. I just wanted to tell you one more story, and that is that when we were there at this Clare church, we were so excited. Always at ministerial time, when you know, between Sabbath school and church, they're always giving testimonies. What happened this week? What happened this week? And who shall we pray for? And the church is really alive, and they're praying and praying. And anyway, on this one particular day that we were there, a lady got up. You saw her picture here. Maybe I'll go back. I'll go back one if I can. No, it's not this one. This lady in the to your right there, she was one who had been invited to go to a small group, a Home of Hope. And she said, "Nah, nah, 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 it's not for me. No, no." She didn't want to do it. But finally she decided one day that she was going. And when she went, the topic was on freedom. Freedom actually is on addictions. Now, there are a lot of addictions that people have, and we're going over those. But if you get rid of the addictions, you have freedom. Well, this lady went to that particular one. So you think, what addiction did she have? Was it caffeine? Was it alcohol? Was it internet? What was her addiction, you know? Well, she gets up and says, she had gone to this topic, and she said, "I have gotten freedom." Most people didn't know what kind of freedom she got. Actually, she was working for a secret society, and I don't know which are some of them, what are the names?
Masons or whatever.
I don't know, but she's working for a secret society, and she knew she shouldn't be in there, and so she decided that she was going to give up her job, cancel all of her appointments, get less money, but she decided she now would have freedom. And she had a beautiful smile on her face. And it's so exciting to see that this lady and her husband was also, he's in a wheelchair. And what was so interesting about so many people in this church, they were either on oxygen, or with a cane, or on wheelchairs, or sick in some way. But the Lord is beginning to work miracles in their lives, and they're changing their lifestyle. One person says, "I've already lost 10 pounds. One person said, "I've God and I have been really close, but now I still have to finish working out my forgiveness process of forgiveness. I still have to work out my problem of being angry at my brother." And so there is growing, and this is what we want, is growing. Health is important. Family is important. Spirituality is important. We want our Adventists and our non-member church members to also grow in favor with God and man and prepare for the kingdom of God, because the WIN Wellness Program is helping people to change their lifestyle so they will live longer, healthier, and holier, and prepare for the last day events, when we're going to need all of our clarity of mind to be able to stand for what we need to stand for in the last days. So I've gone over time. Thank you. Almost. A little bit. Thank you so much.